Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You're about to hear from Rahama Bistritsky Clapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rahama Bistritsky Clapman here on Dev Brenner's Talk Line Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rahama and Family Matters.
I'd like to welcome everybody back tonight on Family Matters, MASS radio show every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m. And MASS, for those that are not familiar, first time coming on, listening to our show, MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids, and we are a helpline. We offer support groups. We are a referral agency. The last 20 years, we've been available to families that are dealing with at-risk, prevention of at-risk, all mental health issues for all ages of family members. And our number is 718-758-0400. Please write our number down. You may need it. Maybe a family member may need it, or someone you sit next to in shul. Please hold our number for someone you may know. 718-758-0400. And if anyone needs a naloxone kit, another form of Narcan for drug overdose prevention, please call our helpline and you can get trained and get a free naloxone kit. We will let you know exactly how to go about that. It's a very short training and you can be a partner in saving someone's life. So call MASS for your naloxone kit. It's free. Give the number to somebody that may need it. So tonight we have on with us a very, very dear, dear friend and colleague, Ruth Deborah Wallen. Ruth Deborah Wallen is a licensed clinical social worker. She has been practicing since before MASS even began. I know that because she has been in the schools for the last 30 years, working with elementary age and high school school staff and girls in the schools. I would like to welcome you, Ruth Deborah Wallen, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Rahama. Thank you for welcoming me.
And I know you practice internationally, but before we get to you, Ruth Deborah Wallen, and I'd like to welcome back my dear friend, Gerianna. Hi, Gerianna. Thanks for being on with us.
Yes. Hi, my friend. It's so good to be with both of you today. I'm thrilled.
Yep. So let's get right to it. Our listeners are probably very curious what we're going to be addressing tonight.
Yes,
Deborah, I wanted to talk to you about, first, where are you? What are you doing? Let's catch up for our listeners.
Yeah, we got to catch up, Rahama.
Yes.
So when you met me, I was directing a program where we sent literally dozens of therapists, counselors to the yeshivas and the day schools in the New York area. And because you had started MASS, we utilized your wonderful organization as like a sister. And you and I met on various committees. At that time, I was in the schools and sending therapists into the schools. Since then, for family and personal reasons, we moved to Buffalo. And because of my move and my not being in the area where all the yeshivas are, I am involved in my local school that we have here, which is called Ortamimim, and I work with people internationally dealing with various diagnoses with adults and children, but I do work with children with behavioral issues, various stressors, and it's a wonderful thing. And I still do have my fingers in schools. I have principals who call me and consult with me. I've got parents who contact me to get their kids into therapy, either internationally like I do via telephone or online, or I get them locally people that they can work with. So I still have my finger in the schools, and I have a sense of the pulse of what's going on, and I'd love to be able to share today whatever questions come up with Gerianna or with you regarding children in schools.
Thank you. So, yeah, can't wait to get together with you when you're more local. But meanwhile, for our listeners, we would like to talk about elementary age students and the schools. So my first topic that I'd like to really dig in with you on, and Gerianna, is why do we have school social workers? Why are there school psychologists? So parents can understand the benefits, because many parents over my last 20 years of dealing with schools and families, over 45,000 families that have reached out with MASC, many parents are scared for their children to be seen by a school psychologist,
right,
or a school social worker.
There's still a stigma in
yes,
the mental health
so
arena.
I'd like you to talk more about that, please.
Sure.
The benefits.
And I guess part of it is because we really don't maybe share and expose, like what you're doing today, enough to the religious community for them to understand what is available, what's the benefit. And I think the most important thing is people are afraid that it means you either have a mental illness because you need to speak to a counselor or a therapist, or even though we're talking about school-age children, sometimes even preschool or primary-age children, they're worried about what's going to be with their shidduchim, their matches, when they get older. I think first you got to nip whatever the problem is in the bud. The earlier the better, getting children at this school age, helping them be able to manage their stress, manage their educational issues, and then later on they will get a better zivug, a better match. There's so many things that you could speak to a counselor, a school social worker about, and I think parents need to avail themselves to this opportunity, as well as the students and the teachers in the school and the administrators. Like, there are many children who have learning issues, learning disabilities. Maybe they've got ADD or anger management issues. Maybe there are problems at home. Maybe there's marital issues, or there are things that are going on with health matters with family members. You know, you can see signs of stress in your children when they have sleep disturbances or a change in appetite, or they talk about nightmares, or they're eating differently, they've got headaches or bedwetting or stomach aches. With little children, a behavior like that could mean that there's something going on inside. Maybe there's some anxiety or they've got something else. Sometimes you see regressive behavior. You see a young child who goes back to a behavior that he had prior because he's under some sort of stress. So if we can nip it in the bud and catch kids early, you're talking about the ability to help a child quicker and more effectively and efficiently when they're younger. Because, look, you probably know about the new neuroscience of neuroplasticity. So neuroplasticity is really, if you look in the Torah, the Rambam speaks about neuroplasticity through behavioral plasticity. The more you repeat a behavior, whether it's good or bad, the more ingrained it is. And so the more we allow our children to keep practicing either negative behaviors, whether it's frustration tolerance issues, or if they've got not giving them the benefit of what they can do now to help themselves, the problems will be amplified later. So I think having counselors in schools, you know, either therapists or mentors or counselors, is really critical for our children's upbringing and their general education.
Yes, Christopher, 100%. But let's talk about that parent that is nervous about if the school finds out that my child has an issue, mental health issue, bedwetting issue, anxiety issue, learning disability. They may be scared that the school will say, well, we can't handle your child. So,
So there are two ways to look at it. First of all, I think what you're doing now with this kind of a program, this radio program, Ruhama, is so important. Parents need to understand that these are normal life issues that a lot of children go through. Unfortunately, there is not a normal. What is normal? The new normal is not normal. We've got so many things impacting our children's lives, and we have to face the fact that school might be difficult, home might be difficult. I think a lot of these parents are more concerned about their children exposing things that might happen at home. And also, you know, the fear that it's not just that the school's not going to be able to deal with the child. It's maybe they will marginalize the child. Maybe they will treat the child differently. The fact is, sometimes you don't have the school involved. Sometimes people go for private therapy. But if you don't integrate the school into that therapy, and they don't know what's going on with their child, and they're not able to look into the process and have knowledge of it, so it's not holistic. It's not integrative. The child might do well in one setting and not in another because of that.
Give parents the language on how to communicate with their child the importance of sharing once they are asked to see a therapist in the school? Because some kids...
that's really important.
You know, well, some kids really shut down.
Yeah, and I think modeling. I think a lot of it is the parental modeling. If parents have brought their children up saying, oh, don't tell anybody about that. Don't tell anybody that you can't do that. Don't tell anybody that you have a problem with your, you know, wetting your bed. Well, then they're modeling a behavior for the child to be frightened to share. But if the parents buy into the system and they're not afraid to call the school and have a meeting and bring the child into the meeting, and they buy into it, and they can do, especially you mentioned elementary age children. This is a time of life where children can be very easily shaped and molded in a really wonderful way through our guide, through our guidance, and through our behavior. If we are not role modeling for them, if we're not modeling the role of a receptive person who talks in therapy, if the mother has been saying for years, oh, I would never go to therapy, that's showing the child to be afraid of it and not be open to it. So I think our parents need to be good role models and say that they reach out for help. Maybe they're not in therapy, but they reach out and speak to a rabbi or a rebbitzin or call a mentor for themselves or call advice of another professional. If we show our children that kind of a role modeling, it's more likely that they will buy into the system.
Okay, in regards to perfect parenting, I would love to dive more deeply into that realm for a moment, if we may. As a proud mother of an 8-year-old, a fantastic young lady, I'm very keenly aware when I mess up as a parent and need a do-over, as we talk about do-overs in my household. And one of the things I've noticed that is common with my circle of friends and not just here in the neighborhood but also colleagues that I work with is that parents today have a tendency, I believe, to be very hard on themselves. And,
oh, yeah.
And so, right, and so what would be great is to get an expert take on the situation from yourself as to tools, practical things that we parents can really dive heavily into so that we can get the communication going that, hey, look, no one here is perfect.
Wow,
parenting,
that's a beautiful question. It's a perfect question, Jerianna, because it dovetails exactly into the topic that we were just ending with prior. First of all, perfect parenting doesn't exist. It's a misnomer.
Right.
Every child is a unique individual. So you cannot have a cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all parenting. So let's start with that premise. Moms and dads out there, there is no such thing as a perfect parent. We'll start with that premise. The second thing is, prior we were talking about role modeling. When a parent acts humble enough to recognize that he or she has made a mistake and is open with the child to tell them, honey, I'm sorry, I was late for your soccer game. I'll be really, really on top of it next week. I won't do that again to you. I know you were waiting for me. If you can be transparent and open and honest and really sensitive to the needs of each child, that is a perfect sort of parenting. It's perfect for that child. Your children need to know that mistakes happen in life. If we try to create a sterilized, everything's perfect environment and parents don't ever make mistakes in front of their children, it's not fair. It's like everybody needs to eat a little bit of dirt, you know? You can't be hiding from reality. So I think that's the next premise, that we need to individualize our parenting as well as be vulnerable in front of your children. Obviously, you don't want to scare them with very serious problems, but according to their age level, it says, Chanoch Lenoar Al Pi Darko. Educate the child according to his way. You got to know his way. So if he's got a learning disability or he's got an attention deficit or he's got anger management issues or he's got parents who are fighting amongst themselves, that individual child needs to be attended to depending on what he's being exposed to.
Yeah.
Does that answer a little bit, Jerianna?
It does, And I hope it does comfort our listeners as it brings such soothing and comforting effects to myself. Because, you know, one thing that we just dealt with as a household, which is I'm sure very common for our listeners, is that grade school children getting into second and third grade, you're now starting to take tests. And our daughter came home the other day and
stressful.
Said, it's stressful. And she said, Mommy, did you ever get a bad grade? Did you ever receive an F when you went to school? And I said, yes, I certainly did. And we talked about it.
How noble, because there are many parents who would not tell the truth because they're afraid of the judgment of their children and they want to keep their children to a certain standard. But that doesn't help them if we're not honest. They can feel
They can feel it, and I completely get what you're saying and agree 100% because I could see the stress begin to melt off of her face when I shared with her this secret that, yes, Mommy did receive an F, and it was in geometry. And then we talked about, you know, what can you do while you...
I got a D in physics, Jerianna.
Okay. But it was great because then it led to a discussion about she was studying Albert Einstein and how it's okay. You know, people have things where they soar and they're talented and it's their comfort zone. And then those same folks can have areas of struggle.
Yes.
And that doesn't diminish
yes.
or take away from the talented. Right, right.
Exactly,
so I'm so happy
Jerianna.
You cleared that up.
I think what's really important is the expectation that we have on our children needs to be realistic. And their understanding of us as well. They can't expect a perfect parent either. And if we're honest and honorable, if we're really noble with our children, we don't put that facade that mommy and daddy never make mistakes. That would be that would put the child in a position on their own. Sometimes the child judges him or herself because of certain standards that they see.
Right. And well, I'm glad that you touched on that. I'm glad you spoke. I just wanted to say I'm glad you spoke on the whole test performance, and also, you know, expectations are so important that children understand that, you know, we have reasonable expectations, because we can cause problems, right, when I would think the expectation is not realistic or healthy.
Right. Now, the other thing is parents can also model self-care to help their children deal with such stressful things like test taking. So a parent could say, you know, whenever I have a big deadline, or whenever I take a big test, or I have to fill out some very, very daunting paperwork, I relax myself, or I make sure that I've eaten well, or that I'm well hydrated. You know, if sometimes just self-care alone helps a child manage his stress in school and at home. So our being role models for our children is really, I think that's paramount. Children don't do what we say. They do what we do.
I love
that. They hear not the verbal language, but what we're really doing in life.
That's exactly. I think that is at the core of what we're speaking about today. I just 100% am with you on that.
Thank you, Joanna.
And I think, thank you, Joanna, for the questions.
Yeah, so I'd like to also touch on the expectations that parents have when they have kids that do very, very well and very, very smart, and then they may have one child that just is right below a very, very smart child, and the child themselves even have their own expectations to live up to that older child.
That's a very challenging thing. I actually have a child whose younger sibling is doing really, really well, and he is not. So I hear exactly what you're saying, and this is very painful and very stressful. So I would say the first thing is that there's an openness in communication, even amongst the children themselves. This child does well with this, and this child does well with another thing. I think it's important for us, you know, the expression, catch them doing something right. We've got to embrace the uniqueness of our children and see, even if the child is not good academically, but he might have a musical gift or a gift with athletics or sports. And what we need to do is train our eyes and the eyes of our other children to see that child with a reframe. So he's not good at that, but he's good at this. And I think the schools, the teachers, and the staff also need to learn how to emphasize the special talents that our children have. You know, sometimes you've got a kid who cannot do well in math, but he's great with art or music or sports. And I know a lot of our yeshivas don't offer that. We may need to encourage that at home. So each child, their individuality needs to be emphasized. And, you know, sometimes you do, Rochama, you brought up a really important point. Sometimes as a child, it's not just that he's not doing well. Because he's not doing well in school, he might act out or be a clown or act as a bully because he doesn't feel good about himself. This is a direct pointer to why school counseling, or at least private counseling outside of school, is critical, because this child feels lousy to begin with. He's juxtaposed against another child who's doing exceedingly well, and his poor scholarship is adversely affecting his behavior. And when a child feels stressed and down and out, it's less likely for him to want to go to his other gifts and his other talents. That needs to be encouraged and engendered by parents, teachers, and the counselors themselves.
Very important topic that we are discussing.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, very important topic that we are discussing tonight with Rustavara Wallen and Gerianna. Our listeners, if you want to reach MASC from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., call 718-758-0400, our confidential helpline. Rustavara is a licensed clinical social worker with practice internationally and has worked with the schools for over 30 years. So we are going to get right back to you, Rustavara. I do have a question, Gerianna. I'm wondering, have you dealt with parents in your professional life who struggled with their children speaking to an in-school therapist at any time?
Good question.
Absolutely. We have had many parents over several years have been fearful to, first of all, acknowledge that their child may need to speak with an in-school therapist. And oftentimes the parents have articulated clearly to members of their treatment team that they're afraid to take that step because they are unable to come to terms with the fact that their child may have a common mental health struggle like anxiety, school anxiety or depression, because they see that as a weakness and they don't want their child to be perceived as broken, or they're very fearful that they will be classified then as a child who cannot perform well in school, which obviously no is not the case. It's simply about children needing certain tools under the mental health umbrella, and talk therapy is an incredibly helpful tool when you have a therapist in the trenches with the child that goes to school every day, that when a child is facing a particularly stressful or challenging moment, they can pull that child out and really start the communication dialogue to figure out where is the root cause of the fear coming from and the difficulty within the child. So, yes, what we have is a lot of parents, they want to give their children all the help in the world. The intentions are right from the heart, but they have a difficult time acknowledging it because to them, they see it as a very significant weakness.
A deficit.
Yes, a deficit. And they're not sure if their child will be able to recover, if that makes sense. So their intentions are pure right from the heart, but they're terrified that if they acknowledge that there's an issue going on as anxiety or depression, something common like that, they don't know how everything is going to be made better, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And if I may speak to this, there are a couple of other things that I've seen through the years. One is, you know, because we are not perfect parents or perfect spouses to one another, it's very possible that this child is going to need to share some of that to the counselor. And I believe sometimes really well-meaning parents are just simply afraid that they're going to be exposed as imperfect, not just the child as imperfect.
Yes.
And there are a lot of family influences that affect the well-being of our children as well. So now we're exposing our whole family to this person. And then I think another element, and this is what kids tell me, and I had a high school girl call me the other day that the school called her parents when, and this is a high school girl, I believe children who are over a certain age, when you say that this is confidential and nobody will know, you know, at a certain age you can say, except for your mother and father, right? But at a certain age when a kid is trying to separate and individuate, and sometimes the main push away from is the parents, they will say to the counselor, I don't want this going to my parents right now. I need to work things out before we share with the parents. So that is sometimes a trepidation from the older child's perspective. And I had this girl call me. She wanted to speak with me individually and privately because the school accidentally did mess up. And they called the parents, and she wasn't ready to share. She was getting ready, and she wasn't quite ready to share with her parents what she wanted to say. So, you know, we're not perfect as, in the schools either. But I think, again, and this speaks to the original issue, if we're honest and honorable, and we acknowledge that we've got problems too, a lot of the problems come from the family. There's a famous book called Fables by Arnold Lobel. He was an award-winning children's writer. And one of the fables is about a bad kangaroo. That's the title, The Bad Kangaroo. Talking about a little naughty kangaroo who puts thumbtacks on his teacher's chair and glue on the doorknobs and firecrackers in the desks. And the principal comes home to the parents, and he sits down on a chair, and there's a thumbtack. Ouch! Then he goes to the bathroom and opens up the medicine cabinet, and firecrackers come out. And he tries to grab the door, and there's glue on it. And he runs the heck out of the house. Well, the mother says, I wonder what happened. The principal left so quickly. And then it says, and the kangaroo family finished their meal throwing spitballs at each other. So sometimes the norm in the family is something that parents are either afraid to expose, or B, they consider it a norm, so there's no problem. Or C, they're in total denial of it. They don't even see it as an issue. It's not an issue. So there are many, like we said, each child is an individual. Each family situation is unique. And there are various reasons why parents avoid getting their kids into counseling, especially younger children. Like I said earlier, because the child's brain is much more neuroplastic and able to be molded, and their habits can change much more quickly at that age, it's silly for us to wait until the kid is avoiding the parents and going on their own or being forced to by a behavioral intervention at school. What a shame. So I think the honesty, the integrity of the parents to acknowledge their own issues, to acknowledge that the household might have issues, and to be open with the children and say, it's good for us to speak to people. It shouldn't be a shanda, an embarrassment.
And like I was saying, stigma-free, the most important message that we at MASC, you, Ristvara, Gerianna, all of us together need to make it possible that parents feel safe having their kids speak to the school therapist and see a private therapist. Gerianna, I know you're harried today and need to get off early. So before I go on with Ristvara Wallen, both I and Ristvara would like to say goodbye and hope to have you on again in the near future. Thank you, Gerianna.
Thank you, Gerianna.
Thank you. This was indeed a special show, and our guest, I'm just so thrilled that and honored that we had you with us today, because as a parent, my heart is full, and you have brought so much knowledge and comfort to this beautiful job that we parents get up and seek out to do our best every day. So from my heart to yours, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a wonderful meeting you. And Rahama, my friend, yes, I will see you soon. For another exciting show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gerianna. And we are here with Ristvara Wallen tonight on MASC's Family Matters. Ristvara, I'd like to put
again
a spin on our conversation now and talk more about school staff and how they look at children in elementary age, high school age, seeing therapists, needing therapists. How do they identify the students that need to be seen? What are their feelings in the administration or the teachers, when they get together for school staff meetings? what are their feelings about students seeing in-school therapists and parents' involvement?
That's a lot.
So if we can talk more about that angle that I know you've supervised so many schools over the last 30 years, on this topic.
So this is a mixed bag, Ruchama. I'm sure you realize certain schools are very open. And not only are they very open, when we bring programs in, they augment them. Sometimes we're bringing in a program that already has a grant or something like that, but then sometimes they will even hire their own counselors, which is great. Those open-minded schools tend to lead from the top down, right? The tail follows the head. And when the principal and the vice principal and the Hanhala are open-minded about bringing counseling and educational programs about emotional wellness into the schools, then the staff follows. In many places that you and I have dealt with in the past, sometimes you've got a closed-minded staff. We're able to bring a program in, maybe there's a free program, maybe MASC is offering some things, or Agudath Israel, or some entity, but they're not utilized properly because the staff is not really encouraging the kids to take advantage, or they're perceiving the children in a negative light. So your questions are, it's a mixed bag, because some schools we do have the openness and the receptivity, and in some schools we don't. What I think the ideal thing would be across the board would be to make school staff more aware. There's many school staff members who are, let's say, I don't want to talk ageism, but from a different, let's say, mold, that might themselves perceive therapy as problematic, so they will accidentally stigmatize their students or their mentees because of the issues that they have. So this is really a tricky thing. We need to destigmatize it, you know, I don't want to say normalize it, but make it more normalized in the way that it's something that people do and can do and should do if there is a need. I think the first thing that we need to deal with is at least getting everybody assessed who might have learning issues or behavioral issues. It's got to start at the level of the Hanhala, the principal, the vice principal, and her staff or his staff. They need to be open to it. You know, maybe we need to get into the Hanhalas and educate them a little bit more about being receptive and letting that trickle down. Because children with individual personalities and gifts and challenges need to be dealt with individually, as we said earlier. You know, sometimes you need just a simple educational evaluation. And if a child needs some services, either for learning issues, speech, PT, OT, counseling. So if those are not dealt with early, as you understand, it will cause emotional issues later. It will make it hard for the children to deal with life and school later on. So your point is really an important one, but I can't answer for all the schools. I can't tell you where they're at. Ideally, we got to get staff all on the same page, understanding that we live in a really critical time where budget cuts make it harder to have extracurricular things, even things that shouldn't be extracurricular are becoming not the norm. And in some areas, this is the only place where certain children excel. And so sometimes they're finding that those kids who don't have their talents brought out at school doesn't meet their needs, or school is stressful for them, so they become at-risk children. I also talk about...
Yes, we have a lot of these families that are suffering in elementary age, students that are scared. They are frightened because they know that their child may need services, but there's still the stigma is still, they're stuck with the stigma issue. And it's important what you're saying, that we need to realize that it's going to be 50% the home and 50% the school. We need to meet in the middle. It's not just the school or just the family. It's got to be a partnership. So in order for it to work well.
Your work is in New York, and what an unbelievable gift we have in New York State, that the state will give these evaluations and then offer the free therapies in the school. It's a remarkable thing. When a child has an IEP that says he deserves half hour of counseling every week and an hour of speech and an hour of special ed, what a blessing that we have this. What a shame to not take advantage of it. So you've got this child whom you're hiding or fearful of sharing what his issues are. And one of the weird, let's say, images is it's going to stigmatize them when they grow older. Not if you take care of them now. It's going to stigmatize them for a wedding, for a shidduch, for a zivug. Well, not if you take care of them now. If you take care of your child now, they will be perfectly in line with their cohorts the rest of their school years. And I've seen it. We know, Ruchama, you and I know about early intervention. The early intervention program helps children 0 to 3. If they can get their some of their issues dealt with then, they may not have those issues at school, in their school age. And it won't make them at risk later. I know of a person who literally hides behind a desk now because as a child, he was picked on. He had a speech impediment. Then he was asked to deal with that speech impediment medically. It was dealt with. There was a surgical procedure done. He was told to go for therapy, and the parents didn't encourage it. The child never really ended up speaking well. And so now, as a young adult, he hides behind a desk and behind a computer and has a very poor social life and feels stigmatized from very early on. So we really, really, you know, we all need to buy into this, or it affects the children. Why would we want a child who could get these things remedied for free in our beautiful New York State? Why would we want to avoid that, and then later on the problems will be just amplified?
Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, that's a very important reality that we all need to recognize, is that elementary age prevention is what is going to help young adults in their high school years and in their life going forward, if we are to get them
Absolutely.
Evaluated at a very young age. There are times that a school will tell the parent, your child needs to get evaluated, and as young as second, third grade. And we know, Rustvora, both you and I know, that a first and second and third grade teacher could identify a child that has the need
absolutely.
To be evaluated. But not all parents sure. understand why they should evaluate a child in third grade or in fourth grade. They may think, why so young? What are they doing already? So can you talk about the evaluation and what an IEP is for those parents that really are not familiar with an IEP and the benefits of evaluating as young as possible when asked to evaluate from a school?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would imagine much of your audience, Ruchama, is the religious Jewish population. And they may not even be aware, because we have to pay tuition in these schools, they may not be aware that New York State and New York City offer for free these evaluations and then the follow-up therapies. So first of all, an IEP is an individualized educational plan. And they go through all of the areas of the child's physical, mental, emotional, educational, and try to really get a snapshot of the child in this plan to determine what services might be appropriate and offered. You know, sometimes parents don't even realize that there are things that they're seeing at home that could be really remedied through these kind of services. So I would say the parent and, of course, the teacher, like you mentioned, the teacher is really like, you know, a first responder when the parent doesn't know about these services. The teacher looks in the classroom and can tell when a child is anxious. So what's really amazing is that we live in New York State, and New York State and New York City provide free services for our children, even if our kids are going to yeshivas and we're paying for tuitions in yeshivas. So all the parent needs to do is to request that an IEP be done. The IEP is the Individualized Educational Plan. That means they will get a therapist from the city or from an agency to come and evaluate the child either in the school or at a designated place, and it will give a snapshot of the child's educational, physical, emotional needs, whether they have speech issues or educational issues, and then they will give this roadmap so that the teachers and the therapist and the principal and the parents can cater specifically the needs for this child. It's an amazing thing that we have this free opportunity. I think a lot of parents don't even know that they can take advantage of it. I think they don't realize that it's something that they're entitled to if they see issues with their children. And I think parents don't even realize that certain behavioral issues may have to do with their educational issues, and some educational issues may have to do with behaviors or issues going on in other places. So parents need to look out for, let's say, a child's particularly anxious, or the teacher notices they've got concentration problems, or as the teacher, as I was mentioning before, the teacher is the first responder. They watch the children in class. They can tell if a child is moody or there's a new issue coming up or they're crying or they're not associating with some of the kids and socializing. The teacher can then refer the parent to an organization to do the educational assessment for the plan. And a lot of kids have difficulties in school for a multitude of reasons. Could be home-based, could be medically-based. Sometimes kids have headaches. Sometimes kids are not eating, a good enough breakfast. Sometimes these things can be dealt with right away, but sometimes they actually require an educational evaluation to determine what the services are. I think it's an amazing opportunity that we have this available for free for our children. It needs to be, I guess, explained. This is another thing. Maybe the schools need free programs for parents to learn about what they can do for their children in these, you know, free programs, these entitlement programs that we have.
Yeah, there are so many programs out there for parents to get assistance for their children. Parents need to pick up the phone, call MASC or another organization. There are so many agencies out there, different than when I started MASC 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. It was the Lone Ranger out there.
Yes. It was lonely then because we were the only ones doing it at the time, us and then Project Yes. Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz did come, you know, with his helpline. And today there are many, many different organizations, Askanim, community agencies that are working to help families when dealing with issues and prevention of any issues. So it is important that people write down MASC's number, 718-758-0400. Maybe you know someone that can use it, our number, to get some referrals, to go to a support group for parents, to help with the yeshiva liaison. There are so many kids that are not in schools, Ruth Devorah. I want to touch on that. We don't have much time, another 5-6 minutes left. And I want to talk about two things. Number one, I want to make a public announcement and statement that we are very blessed that the schools are asking for assistance, not like 20 years ago. 20 years ago, they said we don't have any issues in our school.
Yeah, there are no needs. We don't have any needs.
Right. Not like that today. Today, the schools, the yeshivas, are asking for assistance. They're reaching out for programs. There's a lot more work to be done. We cannot throw kids out of yeshiva without placing them into another school first. There are schools that still need to get on board, but on the whole, the schools are doing amazing programs with therapists. Do you see that change also from your end?
Absolutely. I see it across the board, private therapy also. I mean, in the early 90s, I didn't have a practice that I would invite religious clients to because they wouldn't come. They would go as far away as possible, you know, to not have therapy within their own Dalai-Lamos, their own community. Now, everybody's recognizing the importance of taking care of themselves. Hillel says, "Imeina nili mili." So if the parents don't take care of themselves, it's going to trickle down. The kids are going to feel it too. So, again, it goes back to that role modeling. The parents, the teachers, the staff, the principals, they all need to be open about this and encourage it. But, yes, I see a huge difference in the schools. I have a dear friend who also does a similar program to what I did when you and I met with Agudath Israel. There's more of a need than there is money and you know, time to get into the schools. It's just a continuous flow of need.
That is definitely an issue. Finances, that's what I want to touch on, is that not always do people have insurance that covers private therapist. Some parents, some families have Medicaid or insurances that don't even cover mental health therapy.
Absolutely.
That is another issue, that by your child seeing an in-school therapist, at least you won't be denying them of those services.
It's free. We've got to be crazy not to offer it. I mean, it doesn't even make sense.
Right,
yeah,
that's what I wanted to talk about, the expensive financial burden that families are facing now that they're ready to reach out for mental health assistance, therapy, outside school. It is a huge financial burden when needing to take a child to therapy and an evaluation. Evaluations are costly. They could be $3,000 an evaluation at least.
Do you have any go-to organizations that you could tell your audience about that will help fund any of these evaluations, Ruchama?
No, so MASC does not get involved with funding. We're not in the position to, but we can refer the families to different organizations that possibly can help in a small way. But I do want to mention that MASC does not have funds itself. So if anybody wants to get an eval done. We have wonderful organizations and therapists that do private evals if a family doesn't want to work with the Board of Ed. Call 718-758-0400. We're open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can call anonymously, ask your question, see whether or not we can help you in a referral, offering parent support groups, getting programs into your yeshivas, whether your daughter's or your son's schools. You can call MASK. We have a big staff waiting to help each family with whatever needs they may need to get their loved one the help that they may need, any mental health issue, drugs, alcohol, gambling, eating disorders, schizophrenia, bipolar, any mental health, gambling. Did I mention gambling? Feel free to call MASK 718-758-0400. Ristavara, what would your message to parents be tonight before we complete our show? What is that message you want to say to parents to give them the hope and to encourage them to pick up the phone, whether to MASK or to speak to their school? What message would you like to leave our listeners with tonight?
Okay. So I guess my main message would be that, parents, you have the ability in your hands to make a difference in your children's lives by being good role models, by opening your mind and showing encouragement to getting help and support in general. You know, when someone needs help, they should ask for help. But specifically what we're talking about here tonight is receiving maybe therapeutic services in the school, whether it's for educational reasons or behavioral reasons. When the parents are open and honest with their children, the children feel it. They can be more open and honest with their parents. I've got some parents, the children don't talk to them, and I've got some parents, the children talk to them openly and continuously because the parents are open with the children and the children feel the unconditional support. So what you can do is be unconditionally supportive of your children, whether they've got lots of abilities or any disabilities, God forbid, and consider getting them the support earlier than later, because the earlier you do it, the quicker the healing and the help can come through, and then the child will no longer be marginalized or stigmatized in his own social milieu. Children who don't speak correctly are picked on. Children who don't behave appropriately are picked on. We don't want our children to be bullied, and then it's going to augment the problem later in life. So my main message would be, I guess, like Hillel says, im lo achshav emasai, if not now, when? The earlier, the better. Get your kids the support that they need. Encourage them. Be honest about your own shortcomings. It doesn't need to be to reveal horrible things, but to show children that you are human. And because we are human, we do get support and we get help. And I think that will make at least a little bit of a difference. We obviously need to talk to our schools, our principals, and our hanhalas to make them more open-minded and to, either awaken or let go of certain elements that prevent and hold back the growth of our children. This is a very complex time. It's a really complex time with all the digital devices and all the exposures. We really need to work against the tide and help our children to benefit in this way.
Thank you. Thank you, Ristavara. And anybody that wants to reach Ristavara Wallin, call 718-758-0400. Hope to have you on again. Thank you, Rosie.
Thank you. I'll have to work with the same team because it sounded like it was a good combo. All right.
Thank
you. Have a great day, Ruhama. And good Shabbos to your people.
Thank you, and have a very good Shabbos and a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.